of Miss Elson, so we got to actually suddenly have a full house. So let's rock and roll. We're going to call the Organization Committee of the St. Paul City Council to order. Good morning. We have a few items on our agenda today, particularly an overview of the sewer availability charge, something I often call SAC charges, and I repeat the C because C stands for charge, and I'm trying to break myself of that habit, but presented by Ned Smith from the Met Council. And Travis Bistito will also be participating in this conversation. I think we had a bit of the city's, I guess the city's half of SAC fee impact or how we manage that on our end. It was a couple weeks ago with the Department of Safety and Inspections. And so I think it's helpful to understand like what the source of the SAC fees are. And so I think this will be very interesting. And I did have a chance to look at through the PowerPoint and really found it fascinating. We will undoubtedly have questions throughout the presentation. So if you don't mind, we'll just kind of pause it as we're going. We'll talk a little bit after that about our budget process and planning. We have some changes that we've been mentioning that we plan to make this year in our planning process so that we, again, do more of the work on the front end and less at the 11th hour when we're kind of beyond the point of changes. And then our monthly update on our committees, boards, and activities. So just overview of where we're headed. And with that, I will turn things over to Mr. Smith.
Thank you, President Brenmon, and thank you, members of the council, for inviting Met Council to be here today. We really appreciate it. So again, my name is Ned Smith. I'm the finance director for Met Council's Environmental Services. I oversee the SAC program, and joining me, in case you have really hard questions, is Jessie Nye, and she is our SAC program manager. I've been here for about 5 years, and Jessie has been working at it for 13 years, so she knows more than me. So, again, we really appreciate the chance to be here. Anytime we can talk about SAC, we're always eager to do so. That sounds weird, but it's a fun topic. And what we usually find is people are very frustrated at first, but once they understand a little bit more about it, it starts to make more sense. They can still be frustrated, but at least they feel like it's a fair charge. So today I want to walk through, I'll do a brief overview of Met Council, what we do, and also our wastewater system, because that's an important component of why SAC exists. I'll talk through SAC kind of conceptually, why it exists and what SAC is paying for and covering, and then I'll get into some specifics on the actual dollars and the money. Well, how do we figure out what a SAC should cost, and how does it impact our budget? And then we're going to dig into the 2016 task force that St. Paul was a great contributor to, where we looked at how can we make SAC simpler and easier. And in the process of talking through that, that'll also help me talk through what is a kind of a an end user experience as they go through the SAC program and how do we do determinations. So just a quick overview, the Metropolitan Council, we like to say we do buses, flushes, housing, and parks. So we are the planning but mostly transportation and wastewater utility for the 7-county region. In terms of our wastewater treatment specifically, we do serve the 7-county region. We have 110 communities that we serve, so we are a wholesaler. We serve 2.6 million people, which is almost half of the state of Minnesota. So we have a pretty big impact. And treat a lot of wastewater. We have 9 treatment plants. We just added one on July 1st. That was the Rogers Wastewater Treatment Plant. They came to us and said, please take it over, and we were happy to do so. We're going to be operating their facility for a few more years while we build a larger one on the Crow River that can accommodate the growth that's happening in the Northwest region. We have about 600 employees. That's down from 1,200 in the 90s, so we are always looking for efficiency and ways to deliver more value for your wastewater dollars. We have about $7 billion in assets across our whole system, and that's an important number because that means we need to spend about $140 million per year to keep it up. And SAC pays for about 30% of that, of our debt service. So SAC is a very important component of our overall financial system. And then we do about this year for 2020, we'll have $311 million in annual operating budget. So concept.
Before you move on, I just something to put in on your follow-up and to-do list. I had the opportunity a couple years back with then Council President Stark to come tour the wastewater treatment facility, and it was incredible. It was incredibly disgusting. but it was also incredibly amazing. And it's something where I think an opportunity for the council and the council staff and in the city to come have a tour of that. I mean, I know that there's like a tour that you do, but to really get a sense of kind of the history of our water treatment and how, I think, I know that between the water utility service here in St. Paul, they say that the water, there's some comparison that they made, but the clarity of our water, like I think at the wastewater treatment plant, they said you could actually put a cup underneath the water that's pouring out into the river. It's that clean, which is no one would want to do. But that we're at that point, when you see what's coming in, it's amazing to believe the work that happens there, especially when you look at the map and realize that the treatment plant here in St. Paul is servicing the giant majority of the area that you're providing wastewater treatment for. So invite us. We'll come with our nose plugs.
We are always working to improve our odor control. It is getting better. But as a finance guy, every time I get to the plant, I take a... That's the smell of money. Yes, we do. Actually, activated charcoal.
I will say that the wastewater treatment plant is in Ward 7, the one I believe that you toured.
Down by Pigs.
And I have been really grateful. I've lived in that neighborhood for going on 40 years. And we have worked really closely with your staff down there on odor issues, and they have been amazing. Including several of my neighbors, this was years ago, but several of my neighbors went to the lab to be able to do the odor identification process so that when there are odors that are problematic, they could identify them so that the plant could look at which part of the operation might not be functioning correctly. So it's been a great relationship.
But definitely worth an invitation, I think, just to the extent, like understanding SAC, same as like understanding just the mammoth enterprise that's happening down right in that little kind of quiet but very busy part of the city. So,
thank you, Council President. And we do tours on a regular basis, and in fact, we have some coming up as a follow up from our budget forums. So we could certainly get some invites out for you for that. And we will be touring the Metropolitan Plant. Once you see it, we say it's capital intensive, but until you see some of those massive pieces of equipment, 15,000 horsepower blowers that are the size of a large truck, it's really impressive. I do want to, we do like to say that the water is cleaner than what it's putting into. So the water that's coming out of the plant is cleaner than what's in the Mississippi River. Mm-hmm. I do not recommend drinking it. So for the record.
I just can't see anyone actually doing that.
But it does look very clean. Yeah. So, and if you go on the plant, you'll get to see, here's what the Mississippi River looks like in a jar, and it's a little bit cloudy. And then here's what our effluent looks like, and it looks like you could drink it, but I don't recommend it.
Well, I think the other thing that they talk about in the tour is the condition of the Mississippi River in the 60s and 70s and where it's come from then as a result of lots of different initiatives as well as the wastewater treatment. So it's cool. I just think when I look at this map and I'm once again reminded what a huge area we serve, that I think it's worthwhile to get our team here and to see the work in person.
Yes, that would be great. So, on this map, that green area is served by the Metro plant. It has a capacity of 250 million gallons per day. We're running about 180 million, usually 150, but because of all the rain. And another fun fact, it's the 10th largest treatment plant in the country. So it's a pretty big one. So what is SAC itself? It is a one-time fee that's charged to local governments for new and increased capacity on the system. And a SAC is basically one residential equivalent, so one single-family household is one SAC. And then we work with businesses to figure out basically how many residential equivalents are in that business. And a bookstore would have less than a restaurant. And so that's what Jesse and I and her team do is those SAC determinations. Typically, the way it works is a new business comes in and they want to either remodel or build something. They go to your permitting office in DSI, and DSI says, please get a SAC determination first. We do that SAC determination, and then DSI will issue the permit. The charge itself is to the local governments, and then the local governments turn around, generally choose to pass that on to the businesses. But it's important to note that capacity is not the same as flow, and and for more detail on that. So the reason SAC exists is because when we build a pipe, we look 40 years out. And so we, in this case, if you look at 1982, we need a 6-inch pipe. But we think about, for that neighborhood, what's it going to look like in 40 years or 50 years? And then we build the pipe for that, which would be a 42-inch pipe. But we don't think it's fair for the current residents to have to pay for future use. And so the current residents only pay for the portion of the pipe that they're using. And then we use 20-year debt to pay for our capital programs. So we have a bill coming due every year. And basically, SAC is to pay for the piece of capacity, the empty part of the pipe, that your business will now be consuming. And what this does is it future-proofs our system. We're able to accommodate growth in the future because we do estimates for where it's coming so that when a new development comes in, we don't have to worry about capacity. We know for the most part that we can handle it. From a conceptual standpoint, it's important to understand that SAC is about providing capacity for the busiest day of the year. So it's not necessarily your average flow. It's about what's the most that could come out of your business on a given day. So one thought is think about TCF Stadium. The flow that's coming out of TCF Stadium right now, you'd probably need a 2-inch pipe. And that's true for about 300 days out of the year. But there are 65 days, and especially one day during the Gopher Badger game, during minute 2 of halftime, where you're going to need a much bigger pipe. And so SAC is about holding that capacity in reserve. So we basically promise that capacity to you. One way to think about it is, even though it doesn't really work this way, but think about a highway that has 10 lanes. You're buying, when you purchase SAC, you're buying a lane. And that lane will always be available for you, and we won't put anyone else on it. And that will prevent a backup. This is true in the pipes, and it's also true at the plant. So we make sure that we have capacity at the plant for what your busiest day. And that's to make sure you don't get a backup in your basement. If you think about a restaurant, let's think about Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub. Same thing coming out of there right now, not much. But during crashed ice, when the streets are completely full, I drew that little arrow because that's everyone is watching crashed ice, and then they're going to go into Tom Reed's pub. And so we need the capacity for that, for all of those people that are in that business. In terms of the money itself, there is also local SAC and local WAC. So we will charge the local community SAC, and then SAC turns around and the community passes that on to the end user. And then in many cases, they add on a local SAC or a local WAC to pay for their capital program as well. Typically in the core, this is not the case. And then as you move out into the suburbs, the further out you go, the more likely you are to encounter local SAC and local WAC. And it can be substantial. It can be up to 3 times what we charge. So we might charge $24.85 per SAC. The city would tack on another $7,500. So you're looking at $10,000 per SAC. So that's a competitive advantage that St. Paul has from a development perspective, because your overall SAC fees are much lower. There is some that's added on, but it is not a per SAC charge. Near at $7,500.
I missed something right in the middle of that. So can you explain? So you're saying that that outside of the metro area in the exurbs or something, that communities will charge SAC and then a local fee on top of it? How is that an advantage for St. Paul, just that we don't do that? Because we can't?
You could. But it's a competitive advantage from a development perspective. So if the restaurant owns, and if the Buffalo Wild Wings, and they think, wow, should we go to downtown St. Paul or should we go to Waconia? And a Buffalo Wild Wings would probably be around 10 SAC. So in St. Paul, that's going to cost them $24,850, 10 times $24.85. In Waconia, it's $10,000 per SAC. So $24.85 plus $7,500. So 10 SAC there would cost $100,000.
So, but I guess in Waconia, they're never going to have crashed ice. So they're not going to have to save so many lanes of the highway for that Buffalo Wild Wing. So would the SAC determination be higher for a St. Paul business?
It would not, because it's based on the square feet. And so actually, Tom Reed's is probably getting a deal on crashed ice because they probably have more people in there than we thought they would. So it's based on square feet of the business.
Okay. So it's not really, really capacity, because we know that Tom Reed's is going to, many days a year, get busier than any bar in Waconia, probably.
We want to be prepared for the busiest day. And so our...
The determination is based on the square foot of the facility, no matter which community it's in.
That is correct. But I can tell you that any business owner will be frustrated with SAC, because they'll say, look at my water bills from the last 12 months. It was nowhere near what you said I need. And that's right, because a water bill is your average flow. Right. So TCF Bank Stadium would actually come to us and say, your things are crazy, because look at my average.
Right, right.
We're not talking about average. We're talking about the busiest day.
Okay.
So I would say Tom Reed's will be full, but our calculations are based on being very full. And it was based on capacity studies, where we actually looked up, set up a meter at a bar and looked at what happens. But anyway, so it's important to note that you do have a competitive advantage, because your SAC fees are much lower than they are throughout a lot of the region. So what does that money mean to us? It's a critical revenue source. For our budget back in 2019, SAC accounts for 15% of our revenue that we use to run the business, which is about $44 million for 2019. Our wastewater, MWC's monthly wastewater charge, that's the lion's share. That's where the average flow is. So that's your monthly bill. Within St. Paul, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but typically our wholesale fee is about 50 to 60% of your retail wastewater fee. So if you get a $100 bill from St. Paul, about $55 will come to us, and the other $45 will go to St. Paul to manage their stormwater system and their also sewer infrastructure. So it's important to note it's a material component of our wastewater fees. Elimination would increase our monthly sewer fees by 20%. And then it does accrue benefits over 45 years. So this has been in place since the 70s. But a way to think about this is, you know, Ma and Pa retiree and Rondo aren't interested in paying for infrastructure for Allianz Field. So Allianz Field is paying for their infrastructure, and Ma and Pa retiree are just paying for the piece of the pipe that they're using. The other important thing to call out here is just a little public service announcement. So even though we are part of the Metropolitan Council, we have financial firewalls with the rest of the council. So we, by statute, are required to be a fee-for-service agency, and the dollars that we raise can only be used for the operation, maintenance, and rehabilitation of the Metropolitan Disposal System. So we are not using SAC to pay for light rail. We are not using SAC to pay for Metro Rail. SAC only can pay for the wastewater treatment system. So in terms of how did we get to $2,485 per unit, SAC pays for the capacity portion of debt payments. So SAC pays for the empty portion, and this is also in the Minnesota statute. So we look at our system and we figure out what is empty and what is full, and blended across the two, we're about 32% empty and we're 68% full. So when we get a debt service bill, which is our mortgage payment on our outstanding debt, we have about $1.3 billion in outstanding debt. So we get a debt bill of $139 million. So we say with the system is 32% empty, so therefore SAC needs to pay for 32% of that debt. So that's the 44.3, and then the 94.7 gets baked into the monthly wastewater charge that Ma and Pa retiree play. So now we know that SAC needs to pay $44.3 million. We put together an estimate for how many units we think we're going to have for a given year, how many SAC units, and we estimate around 17,000 to 18,000 units per year. Divide that into 44.3, and that's how we get $2,485 per unit. So the fact that it is 15% of our revenue is a good contributor to the fact that our rates are so low. So comparatively, our rates are 40% lower than the national average for peer agencies. Now, this is based on a NACWA, which is the National Association of Clean Water Agencies. Every 3 years, they do a survey. They ask all of their member agencies across the country, what is the average retail sewer bill for a 5,000-gallon per month household? And we, Metropolitan Council, we do a survey every 2 years where we go out and ask all of our customer communities, what do your customers pay for 5,000? So that's how we get to this 274 on average versus 468 for the national average. So we're 40% cheaper. So we're very proud of our cost competitiveness there. It's important to note that SAC is only charged for increased capacity. So it's only when a new or an existing business increases the capacity demand on the system. So either you're building a new building, that's an increase, or you're changing a retail, you're changing a model. You're doing a remodel that changes the use of the building, so from a bookstore to a restaurant. And SAC is fundamentally based on the people that will be in that site and what will they be doing. So a bookstore, they walk in, they buy a book, and they leave. They might dwell a little bit. But a restaurant, they come in, they drink, they eat food that's prepared in a kitchen. A kitchen requires water use. They use the restrooms. So there's more flow that comes from a person in a restaurant than there is in a person in a bookstore. We do have programs to help small to medium business to defer the cost of SAC. Cities can choose to join the SAC deferral program, and that allows a small business customer to defer the cost of SAC over 5 to 10 years. St. Paul is currently not on this program. This is another shameless plug. We love the deferral program, and we would love to see St. Paul participate with us because it is a great program to help small business.
Could you explain how it works?
Yes, Madam President and members of the council. The way it works is the customer, so first the council, the city council must adopt a resolution to join the program. And there's a standard form that we use that sets out all the terms and whatnot. And then you can choose 5 or 10 years as the payback period. And then the customer puts, I think you even choose your down payment.
There's a
minimum of 20%. And then you can spread it out over 5 or 10 years. And over that time, we use our interest rate, which is pretty low. We're generally around 3%. So there are interest fees, but there's no processing fee. And then the customer spreads that out, and they can pay it. They have the option. Semi-annual or annual. And they pay that to the city, and then the city turns around and pays that to us. So, and then there's, as you go, you get partial ownership. So if you deferred 5, or if you deferred 10 over 10 years, and after 5 years you've paid off 5 and then you go out of business, those 5 units still are on site. So what you've already paid for, you get to keep, or that business, or that building gets to keep, or the city gets to keep. And then over time, after 10 years, then you're done.
So, but is the challenge then that the city is then responsible for collecting and monitoring the annual payments?
Madam President and members of the council, that's exactly right. So the city does do that. So in the case of default, some cities will use property tax to collect that. If it gets to that level, mostly they just keep nagging. But yes, the city would be responsible for collecting, and then we do a reconciliation. So we'll send a bill every 6 months or 12 months for here's the interest, here is the deferral payments that are due for this period.
So the Met Council carries the deferral, but we just are basically the bill collector in the interim. So we have a similar program for our street reconstruction. If we do a full street reconstruction, our community members have to pay 20% of the full cost, and they can pay it back over, I think, up to 20 years. And it has an administrative fee, and it also does have interest. But, you know, and that's because we're carrying the cost. So it sounds like you carry the cost. Our job would be just to do the administrative side of it. Okay. Other, Mr. Tao.
Thank you. Can you describe your small to medium-sized business? Is that income, or what is that?
Madam President, members of the committee, that is based on the number of SAC. So the limit right now is 25 SAC units, and that's how we define a small to medium business, yes.
So that's if you're below 25, you wouldn't qualify for this program?
You would.
You would.
Okay. Just a follow-up. So what about housing? Can a housing unit or housing complex, in particular affordable housing complex, be counted as a business?
Madam President, members of the committee, at this time we do not have a residential deferral for new construction. So we do for existing construction if someone is being asked to come on the system, but St. Paul, everybody's on the system. So we do not have a deferral program for housing. We do have some discounts for affordable housing based on either washing machines or garbage disposals, and also for dishwashers. If there is not a dishwasher or a garbage disposal or a washing machine unit in the unit, there are some discounts for that.
I guess I'm just trying to get at where it is critical to have SAC, right, wherever your development is. And I'm just trying to make a connection between the housing situation that we have. Can there be a way where developers who are doing affordable housing can have some sort of incentive that's connecting to the SAC or sewer and water treatment system?
And Mr. Tao, to clarify, are you talking about multi-family housing, right, like larger developments?
Mm-hmm.
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, we do have that discount. We could explore other deferrals or other options. Because we have changed our deferral policy as needs arise. So the fact that there are residential that came out of manufactured homes that were being asked to come onto the system in Corcoran and in Lake Elmo. Lake Elmo was just houses in general, but they were being converted from septic to our system, and particularly for a manufactured home where the value is only $10,000, to come up with $2,485 was a burden. So we worked with the council to roll out a deferral policy for residential. So we can explore options from a deferral perspective. The council itself, we have task forces about every 3 or 4 years where we sit down with members of the community or either elected officials or government staff, public works directors, finance directors, building officials, city managers, and we just kind of talk through. In fact, I'll talk through one that we just did where we talk through how can we make this system better, what works, what doesn't work. And one of the things that came up in a task force about 5 years ago was, can we do subsidies or subsidies for affordable housing, so SAC waivers for affordable housing. And the concern was, we are a regional system where the expense is dispersed across the entire region, and that's what keeps it affordable. And what keeps it fair is if everybody pays. And so the concern was, if we grant an exception or waiver for affordable housing, which no one would argue, everyone agrees that's a good cause and a good development, where do we stop? Do we do it for homeless shelters? Do we do it for churches? Do we do it for libraries? And so the approach was no waivers across the system. But again, we do want to look at other things that we can do to make it more affordable. Again, around the discounts, I think we could certainly explore looking at a deferral option. And I just had another thought, but I lost it. It'll come back.
It's an interesting question, because we've, as a council and with our involvement and with the Met Council and the state on housing and homelessness, it is true that the SAC is regional in nature, but solving the housing crisis is also regional in nature, we believe. And so because a housing project ends up in St. Paul doesn't mean it's just serving St. Paul. It's serving the region. In fact, I think we do more than our fair share of alleviating housing shortages in the city. We're working real hard on that. And so maybe I think it is something – it's a really good question and something worth teeing up, because I think it's just as regional as – the SAC itself is our solutions to affordable housing. So I think it's worth considering. I appreciate that thought.
Yeah, and it's really promising to hear that at least 5 years ago it was thought about. I think my kind gesture would be like, how do we get to a yes? Right? How do we tie these two? There's a need. They're both needs, and they're both critical. And so if there are ways and room to make it work and tie it together, I think that would be really helpful for the entire region, as Council President mentioned.
Council President, one other thing that came to mind is that we do have grants that we have used for SAC. So those grants are not, they are through the council, they're not through MCES, they're through our community development arm. And so we have a grant right now where we're the grant is paying for 50% to convert some manufactured home parks, particularly in Corcoran. So that is another avenue to pursue is can we work with our community development partners to come up with grants that can help alleviate the burden. So speaking of task forces, I want to talk through the 2016-2017 task force that we just wrapped up not too long ago. This was 14 representatives from communities and businesses, so this was cross-functional and cross-regional. So we had, again, public works directors, finance directors, building inspection officials, as well as development directors. And then we had some small business representatives. We had Tom McElroy from the Minnesota Hospitality Association representing small restaurants. And then we had Tom Thomaser from Summit, yes, the COO of Summit. He was also there because Summit pays a lot of SAC. And so we wanted to make sure that so we had the restaurants, which is the people who don't want to pay SAC, and then we had the brewery that does pay a lot of SAC. And so what's implied is anyone that doesn't pay SAC, Summit will have to pay for it because as you've seen, we have a fixed expense that we have to pay. So if we're giving one person a break, we have to spread that across the rest of the pool, which increases their SAC rates. So we wanted to make sure we had representation functionally, regionally, and from a business perspective. We looked at four policies. One was our outdoor seating policy. There was some concern that outdoor seating should be free because we only sit outside for 3 months of the year. But we worked with the task force, and they reminded us that SAC is about the busiest day of the year. So even if you don't sit out there in January, actually for crushed ice, you are out there in January. So it's about the busiest day of the year. So if I have seating outdoors and I have seating indoors, then I have the potential to have that full on both indoors and out, regardless of the time of year. What's interesting is the change that we made on the third recommendation ended up doubling the amount of free space. So we'll talk about that in a minute. Free space for a patio. So that was a benefit. They still did better than they had before. We had an option for manufactured homes, very similar to the affordable housing question. And the thought was manufactured homes don't produce as much flow as a typical house. But we didn't have any data to prove that. And so you could argue it does because it's a smaller family, a smaller location. You could argue it generates more because they have leaky pipes or they have insufficient heating, and so they actually turn their water on and leave it on all day so their pipes don't freeze. So it's unclear what the data says, whether it truly is less than a typical home. So we're going to monitor that flow data, and then, of course, we're encouraging grants, as we discussed. But the two big ones of the task force, first was the opportunity to simplify our SAC determination process. So how do we make SAC simpler? So it's easier for users to understand. It is easier for cities to understand and administer. And then the second one was how do we simplify our SAC credit process? So credit is if someone was in the building before you and they paid their SAC, or maybe they didn't pay their SAC, there are still credits available that you use. We don't start every single remodel fresh. We look at what used to be there, but that is a very complex process. So to start with the determination process, my favorite part about this recommendation is it wasn't our idea. It was actually the task force. We had two solutions that we thought would work. They told us we were wrong, and they had a third solution that was far superior, and that's what we implemented, which was using gross square feet of tenant space instead of net square feet. It's a little bit inside baseball. But we used to look at that. So if you think about a restaurant, we would only look at the seating space. That would be the net square feet, as opposed to the gross square feet, which would be the footprint of the building. We would also, within a given use, if you look on the left, the different colors represent different determination criteria. So a warehouse would be at 7,000 square or 7,000 square feet per SAC, but an office would be 2,400 square feet per SAC, and then a conference room would be 1,600 square feet
per SAC. We're going to make her come sit at this.
I should have a little earpiece. See it. And they said that's too confusing. And it led to a lot of arguing, particularly with the restaurants. What is seating space? What is walking space. They would argue, we would say you can fit 50 chairs, and they'd say, well, I'm only putting in 40, so why are you charging me for 50? Using DeGroat square feet greatly simplifies it. You just look at the footprint of the building. If the footprint doesn't change and the use doesn't change, then there's no change of use remodel required. So it's simpler, and it also makes it much easier for people to understand, and there's less arguing. So if you had a pizza joint and you turn it into a burger joint, but you don't change the square feet, you don't add a patio, there's no SAC due. We've had cases where someone would buy a restaurant, they would remove tables, they would put in skee ball. And even after they did that, there was SAC due, which would blow their mind and they would call me. We don't do that anymore. Now we're just looking at the footprint of the building, if that doesn't change. We still need to be notified and we still will need to do a determination because we need to know what's in the building and what's in the business. And we need to know what type of business it is. So we still need to get involved in all, if you're going from a pizza joint to a burger joint. We still need to know, but we're going to write you a letter that says there's no SAC due. But now we know what's in there. And the other thing that was a problem with this was the surprise. Some council members affectionately call this the SAC surprise. Those will decrease again because the guy put in skee ball and he still had SAC due. That was a surprise. That won't happen anymore.
The number you had was 2748 or for one SAC?
2485.
2485. So how often does that number change?
Madam President and members of the committee, that number has been the same since January 1 of 2014. And that's because we have been enjoyed the benefits of robust development. So we base that 2485 on 17,000 to 18,000 units. We've been above 18,000 units for about 4 or 5 years now. So what we're doing is that additional money is going into our reserve, which we are holding for when the recession comes. So when our units start to drop back down, we will not need to raise prices as quickly. If units stay at 18,000 per year, we will not raise the price until 2034.
Okay. So the credit, the SAC credit, is not based on the price of the credit at the time. It's just the unit. So when you say no change, if something was – go ahead.
So that is correct. A SAC credit is not based on the price. It's based on the unit. So if you bought 10 units back in 1985, they're still worth 10 units today. Okay. And there's a couple of other points around that. So the task force recommended we change how we do the credit. The first piece was around our grandparenting date. So the program was started on January 1 of 1973. So it used to be that anything prior to 1973 would be grandparented in. But that was still difficult because we still had to prove it was a restaurant in 1956. So some of you may have even gotten involved when the Lexington remodeled. We had no records. We didn't know it was a restaurant. And so we pushed back at the city and said, you need to prove it was a restaurant. And we got this look of everybody knows that was a restaurant. Everyone knows that was the Lex. But everybody knows it was the Lex is not an audit trail. And so we had to go out and find some records that proved how big was the restaurant. And from that, we could figure out how many credits were due. And that was huge. It was 35. Yeah, it was about 35 credits that we had no record of. And so but the city pushed back and said, why would I keep records from 1956? We had some fun things that have come from that. Minneapolis used to go to the library and they'd pull out the yellow pages from 1948 and they'd show us the picture of the restaurant. So the task force said, this is burdensome for us. We don't keep records that far back. And so they said, why don't you reset the grandparent date? And so we did, and now it is January 1 of 2009, which means if there's no record of a previous SAC determination, all you need to do is prove what was there before January 1 of 2009, and we'll give you that credit. And then credits will be issued based on revised criteria. So when we went from net square feet to gross square feet, we did a statistical analysis to try to get that to be neutral to revenue for the council, but more importantly, neutral for the customer experience. So a 10,000 square foot Buffalo Wild Wings in 1985 in the old criteria should have the same number of SAC units under the new criteria, the gross square feet versus net. But that essentially meant that we doubled the gross square feet because a restaurant is typically 50% seating and 50% other. So it was 150 square feet per SAC. It's now 300 square feet per SAC. This gets back to the patio benefit. because patios are not 50% kitchens. Patios are 100% seating. So by doubling the amount of square feet for a SAC, we basically doubled the amount of free seats that are out on a patio, because we only charge SAC in whole units, and we round down from 0.49. So if you're at 300 square feet, as long as you have 300 square feet per SAC, if you have 149 square feet or less, then that'll be free. It's a lot of inside baseball, but it just meant we doubled the amount of free seats outside, assuming there's nothing else happening to the site. So we were very happy with this. We've rolled this out across the region. We did some training with small business associations. We did it with we set up some regional meetings. These changes have gone very well. And that is my presentation on SAC. What questions can I answer?
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It really is.
It's really, really helpful to understand. It's the Travis. You've got a look in your eye. Do you want to talk a little bit about the deferment potential for us to look at the deferment?
Sure.
I mean, that was the one thing that was in our big red box. Like they always say.
I need to work on my subtlety.
I mean, it seems like there's a limited field of qualified developments that would even be part of a deferment plan. I mean, sounds like right now residential is not part of that. Was it new and remodel? Or
Madam President, yes, it's new or remodeled.
Okay.
Council President Brenmo and council members, DSI has explored the deferment program a number of times with other city departments over the past couple of years, because, to be perfectly honest, we get the grief from the customers. They get the determination from Met Council. We're the bill collector on those fees, and they come to us and say, are you kidding me? I got to pay this much for SAC, and we don't have a lot of recourse with those particular customers. So we've brought this particular item to PED a number of times, because this is more in line with the deferment programs that they already provide, and it hasn't received a lot of traction yet. But from a small business perspective, it certainly seems like it's an opportunity for the city of St. Paul.
And would it necessarily be a PED? I mean, I guess I can understand like why it would be a conversation to have with PED, but ultimately it seems like something real estate would monitor, like we do with the street reconstruction, which is a public works project, but it ends up associated with the property tax.
Council President Brenmo, certainly could be real estate, could be PED. We're not in the business of loaning money and keeping track. We're not a banking department, yeah. So... You know, I guess DSI doesn't feel like it's our role, but there's certainly an opportunity there for somewhere in the city government to provide that service.
It's an interesting question, because I think that ultimately if we're ending up using our sales tax dollars to help support small businesses as they launch and ultimately paying their SAC, that's an interesting cycle there. Ms. Prince.
Yeah, I would definitely like to look at it as part of our Open for Business initiative. And it sounds to me like we're not actually loaning the money. We're just doing the paperwork. So, and not that that's a small thing, but it is.
We have no carrying cost.
Right. And it's through, I mean, I would guess it's through the Office of Financial Services Real Estate. So that would seem to be the place we would look at it.
And that can be a follow-up for Ms. Houston, I think, as we talk about following up with Open for Business and our next year's budget, but something to at least flesh out and see if it's a possibility. Yeah. And the other thing is if it's a low interest rate and we need to add some sort of an administrative fee to be able to do that deferment over 5 to 10 years to cover the cost, I think we've figured out it's something around the lines of $60 annually or something to cover the cost. Mr. Busseri.
Just going back to that, the deferment, you said if a business goes out of business, does the new tenant or the new business take over the payment of the sewer, or what happens to the sewer itself?
Madam President and members of the council, they have the option They can do a fresh determination and just pay it up front, or they could continue.
It would be a new deferral.
It would be a new deferral.
New deferral? With what's left over, or it's going to be from the beginning?
Madam President, members, it will be so we would do a determination on that site for the new business, and say it was 10. So we would say 10 are due. You've paid for 5, or the previous owner paid for 5. So now you have 5 due, and then we would start a new deferral program for that.
And hopefully they'd be at 5.51, and you'd round up. Right? No. Okay. Yeah, but that makes sense. So, however far along the business that went under was with their payment, gives them credit to that amount, and you do a fresh assessment determination, and then they pick it up from there, and they have the option to pay it all at once, or they also could use a deferral plan. Okay, I have one other question. So how does the city handle our credits, our SAC credits? I know if something comes offline, we have credits that we hold on to. What do we do with those? How do we manage that?
So, Council President Bremo and council members, so typically how it works, and Mr. Smith explained it very well, we have a project that comes across our desk. It appears to be a change of use. We forward that project over to Met Council and Jesse and her staff. They make that initial determination, and then there's some discussion and, you know, in some cases some significant research as to how many credits are actually owed. And I don't know if Ricardo, I don't know how many of you heard Ricardo's update 2 weeks ago. Was the entire council involved?
Mm-hmm.
But through the 2019 budget process, we added an additional half FTE to DSI in our plan review section to provide that research to all customers who are seeking a change of use. And the amount of SAC savings we're projected to save in 2019 is over $650,000 in SAC charges, which is a 60% increase over the savings that we were saving customers in the preceding 4 years on average. So from the research perspective, that additional staff and the budget allowance that you guys gave us is making a difference for those small customers. But there are opportunities. It's my understanding, and I'm not an expert in SAC, but there are opportunities where we could cities have captured SACs before and bank them. The city of Roseville is one example, and one city that we've met with in the past year to talk about their banking program. Specifically, what they do or what we've been interested in is properties that have gone tax forfeit and have been demolished. The city of Roseville will capture those SACs and bank them and then divvy them out for some other purpose that the city council provides. So there is some opportunity to do that. At this point, in this date, we don't provide that service to our customers.
But that would mean then if a restaurant closed or went tax forfeited and they took the credit, that restaurant would be at zero.
That's correct.
Okay.
Council President Bremo, but an opportunity could be, for example, single-family homes. You know, the city of St. Paul does take down about 20 single-family homes. Those are tax-forfeited homes that often just result in a vacant parcel for years and years and years and years. Those credits could be banked and reutilized for a small business or something along those lines.
And then if a house was rebuilt, they would just pay that one SAC,
pay to one credit,
the $2,500, as part of the cost of construction.
Correct.
Which isn't as... like 35 units where all of a sudden, well, if you have a restaurant or something where it becomes like a very impactful, it's like a sidewalk or something.
Correct.
Interesting. Okay. Are there other questions? Mr. Basuri.
With that, is it a resolution that brings that about, or is it something from your side, administration, that you would do?
I think it's a conversation that would need, Council President Bremo and council members, I think it's a conversation that would need to happen with the administration, because there's work behind all of that. I mean, there's record keeping and somebody needs to administer that program. So that's a conversation that probably should be held with the administration.
And it could be part, if we determine as a council that it's a priority, that it could be something that we request in a budget, or that is a conversation, part of our policy conversations in the spring.
Yep.
To move forward, so it's part of our budget conversation in 2020. Okay. Other questions about SAC? Great. Thank you so much. It's incredibly interesting. Hopefully we'll be able to come visit the wastewater treatment plant, but it's I've reached an interesting point in my career where I find this completely fabulous and interesting to really understand what's behind the charges and the infrastructure. And so it's just been very informative, and I appreciate that and appreciate your work as well.
Yeah, thank you for this.
Thank you, Council President Renman and members. It's been an honor, and I'm always, always eager to talk about SAC. So thank you for including us, and anytime you need us to come back, we'd love to.
Thank you. Great. So we'll shift gears a little bit and move. Have Holly take the hot seat and talk a little bit more about our 2020 budget process planning.
Okay. Council members, last time in June, we touched base on the council's 2020 budget planning. And so I've sent out materials and met with the Office of Financial Services, and we've reviewed those. And if there's any changes or feedback you'd like to give me on the materials, just send them to me or let me know now. And I'm planning to get them out to departments so that they can start working on them next week. We also talked about communication and how we engage the community throughout the City Council budget process. And so in response to that, I've developed a budget strategy, communication strategy, I should say. And I'm working on planning a couple different things. So really looking at how do we use our communication to increase opportunities for input and also just get awareness. So there's different things that were suggested and that I'm planning. So the first is a World Cafe event. So in response to the mayor's budget, the City Council would hold an event in the evening with roundtables and specific questions on the mayor's proposed budget to get community input. And I was going to talk about a date on that in just a minute. I'm also looking at creating an email or some type of form on our website that people would be able to submit comments or feedback that way, as well as increasing communication and relevance to the current City Council budget website. We could improve forms and that type of thing. I'm also meeting with the OTC department to talk about creating budget videos with each department that would be released, and then working maybe with your ward offices on social media, or how would we release those. So I have a basic plan, and I think that'll be exciting and an opportunity this year to promote it a little bit more and to let people know, hey, next week we're talking about Parks and Rec, and here's the presentation, and here's how you submit feedback. So if you can't get there.
Right, and also I think with the shift of moving those budget meetings into the large hearing room, they're televised, and so that makes it easier as well. It sounds like Holly's going to talk about scheduling a little bit in a moment, and there are certain obligations, like we have to set the levy limit by a certain date. The budget has to be presented to us by a certain date. We have to pass our final budget by a certain date. So some of the things are in stone. Some of the things are more flexible. And we thought if the budget was presented, it appears that we'll be hearing the budget on the 21st of August.
The mayor's budget address will be August 15th at noon. That is a Thursday. So the next council meeting is August 21st.
And that's traditionally what we've done. We get the budget presentation, and then we get the mayor's budget address, then we get the budget presentation. And then what we're suggesting is a week later, so after folks have a chance to not only hear the mayor's budget, but also the presentation to the council, that then we invite people in. We're not set on this World Cafe model, but it seems like rather than having yet another opportunity to give everybody, 2 minutes to spit out their thoughts, to instead have more engaging conversations, but in a format where the council can all be at the same place at the same time because it's publicly noticed. And so these things are not they're not cast in stone, but they're a proposal kind of based on our experience last year and in prior years. And it's not, I think the other thing that we're experiencing is that just with social media, it's interesting how and when things will mobilize. And so I think we're trying to help folks mobilize and use those tools in a way that's impactful instead of reactive. And so this is really what Holly's putting together to that end.
Council President, Council Members, so the proposal or question I would like to pose today is if we were to have a World Cafe or a similar evening event, would you prefer August 28th or August 29th? So that's Wednesday or Thursday. So there is no public hearing on August 28th. So after the 3:30 meeting, we could hold it downstairs or we could have it the next evening.
And it is a lot. We have a big budget. I think one of the thoughts was we didn't want it to feel like it was a council public hearing. We wanted it to feel like it was a different kind of meeting, which is one of the reasons why we were looking at a Thursday night instead of a Wednesday night. But it isn't a public hearing night, and it would be in a different room. So I think either night is fine. Our Wednesdays have gotten pretty packed. So if this 28th includes Parks, DSI, and Fire at 10 o'clock, the Weinberg Council meetings, and other things that day, you know, do we just go for it and have it on a Wednesday night? Because most of us probably have our Wednesdays open anyway. But when you're saying evening, we're thinking probably 6 o'clock, yeah. 6 to 8 or something down here at City Hall. Thoughts on the dates?
I'm good with either, and I think that we should just try to pick one and maximize people knowing about it. So, I mean, I want all of us to be able to be there, so I'm fine with either, but I don't mind doing it on the – I don't mind having a Monster Wednesday, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I'm fine with either.
Well, and people do – I mean, people who are paying attention and who are involved know that we are a Wednesday – we're a Wednesday gang. But this is also not just for those folks. So, but if people are okay with having a Monster Wednesday, then we can stick with the Wednesday. That's also what a lot of us – plan for, so I think that's it. Ms. Prince?
I think I'm good with Wednesday. I'm just wondering about the location because people have to park, and I'm wondering if it would be better to find a location that was more accessible than the Green Line or something.
We can look at some options.
Council President Brendan, Council Member Prince, yeah, I'm open to suggestions.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
Maybe the new Frogtown Rec Center.
Okay.
Could I ask a question about this, too? I know that we're developing this together. So is there a way to frame this up as this is about reacting to what's in the proposal and sharing feedback with your council member about where you feel like we're on track and where you have questions? And I just think to Council President Ben Moen's point, this is about empowering people earlier in the process. It's creating additional step in the process from what we had last year and reaction to feedback that we had. It's about helping people shape this. And I know that the mayor's office puts in tremendous effort to run the Our Budget, Our City, Our Budget series before they then come up with a proposal. I think this is a good way to build in another step. I specifically remember hearing the feedback of we did the front-end engagement, and then something was proposed, and there was no step after that besides truth and taxation when things were pretty much set to, like, actually formally, like, weigh in. So it would be – I would like to be able to, like, collectively frame this is your spot to do that and come and ask questions and just be clear that it's not, like, another mayor's event. This is, like, communicate with your council member. We'll all be here if you want to communicate to other council members. So that's not on, like, the – time and date stuff, but just as we keep figuring out how to talk about this.
I think that's why we're looking at, I mean, I wouldn't want to promote it as World Cafe, but I think that's why we're looking at that model where it's like,
let's get
the quick presentation.
So much better.
The presentation that comes to us at the council, I think, is really helpful. Maybe even the Mr. Samuels special, which just gives people some context, but then even splitting into tables based on departments. Or you know, where you can move, like every 15 minutes move to hear from one department. And we can continue to flesh out what that looks like. But the idea is definitely, like, we will all be there to hear feedback on the specifics of the actual budget that was presented to us. We're thinking 2 weeks is enough time for people to at least have framed some initial reactions. If we did it any sooner, it would seem sort of like, what's your whiplash thought to what's been presented?
Yeah.
So I think that's the plan.
Awesome. Okay, Council President Brenmoen, Council members. The calendar in front of you is a draft. So we did talk about the event in August. Then the general fund departments will be presenting to the council. I have the levy limit date set for September 18th. It has to be set by September 25th and submitted to the state by the end of September. Currently, there's an organizational committee meeting on October 2nd. I'm holding that as an organizational committee meeting. We have an interesting collaboration of workforce and entrepreneurship events or people coming in for that. So Greater MSP, New Workforce Development Board, and then in the afternoon, libraries would be able to come back and talk about what we heard at Open for Business about their workforce center at Central Library and their entrepreneurship programs.
So. Shocking news. About this
Great. And then I have tentatively set some other departments through October. No meetings October 30th or November 7th. And then we're kind of wrapping up. I guess the next date that I need to decide on is truth and taxation, if we want to continue to have that on a Wednesday after the city council meeting. We're competing. I believe the county usually has their truth and taxation on Tuesday night. So if we wanted to have it at a different time, I guess Thursday, or we just continue with 6 p.m. on Wednesday.
And people can like, let's think about that a little bit, too, because with truth and taxation, you know, way back, apparently in the archives, the county and the school and the city did theirs together. Again, it's a requirement that we have this hearing, and I think it's a kind of a pity because it's far too late in the process to be meaningful, but it's something that we're required to do. So one option would be to just have it with the county and just go through – take our licks all at the same time. We could do it the night after them. But I do think that it is helpful. It felt like it was part of I guess I'll back up and say, like, last year I felt it was an anomaly. People were organizing specifically for that particular meeting, I think with some misconceptions about what it was, or maybe they knew exactly what it was and came to just, you know, make a statement. But we want to make sure that we're not – it's one of those strange places where, again, we have a hearing and then we don't vote. So it's awkward. So if there's a way to frame it that isn't, like, tied to a regular meeting cadence where we're taking votes on everything else except for this one thing that we're having a hearing for, might be helpful. It's like, well, here's the truth and taxation. We're sitting here with Ramsey County. You can give us your 2 cents, and then thanks for coming to the hearing. Might be a better format, because I think when it's tied into the council meeting, it feels like we're supposed to vote, or it feels like it's connected to the budget vote for some reason. So I don't think we've completely landed on that, but something, especially since it's not till December, that we can think about how we want to do that. But it is, it's one of those strange things that we're required to do, and it feels clunky because it is clunky. And so if there's a way to make it more meaningful or to make it nothing, I'm supportive of either.
I'm willing to volunteer brain power for helping the World Cafe be really thoughtfully planned out, just because I think that will help set up how the truth in taxation can feel and be explained. And I hear the weirdness of it and that we have to do it. I think having a good earlier meeting and good, like, ongoing non-public hearing communication with council offices will help overall, like, get to a more productive truth in taxation hearing too. So front end, proactive. I'll help with that however I can.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, for perspective, in the 7 years that I've been at Truth and Taxation, last year was the only year people came. Mm-hmm. Before that, there was two people. So it was an unusual situation. But I think it means it's more likely to continue if we don't do things differently. So it's a good approach.
I like the idea of doing it with the county and the school district. That said, many years ago, and I can't remember what the issue was, which particular levy increase it was or what, but I mean, there were a couple of those meetings that were huge, difficult meetings. But I think there's some real value in the county, in the school district, in the city hearing from people at the same time, because we don't do that. There isn't another time that we do that, and we can kind of all appreciate what each other's issues are, and the public can be speaking to us all at once, and we do have the JEP tax, so there is a way that leads to, arguably, something like the Truth in Taxation being a joint activity. It used to be up at Washington Tech, and I think one year it was a full house.
Well, the other thing is that no matter what happens, when the property tax bills come out, people call us,
right,
even though we're about 27% of the overall bill. So I think it is an opportunity to put some perspective on this is the percentage of your tax bill that's going to the city services. And actually, you know, closer to 35 and 35 are going to the schools and the county. To help put some perspective on it, because I think people just attribute the whole bill to the city. And our portion's fairly modest considering the services we provide. So it's an idea. It's an idea. All right, so let's put our brain power to that too. I mean, the World Cafe, of course. I almost said World Market. Okay, is this helpful?
Council President, yes, and I appreciate Councilmember Nelson your help, as I am one. So I'm looking forward to it and think that promoting and communication will definitely be needed and is part of getting people there. So.
Yeah, and it's just not going to be perfect. You know, like, the world's changing and the way people communicate is changing, and I think we're really trying our best to be on the forefront of this, and we continue to change and evolve our budget process to meet those needs. So I'm proud of the changes that we've already made, and I think that these will continue to be a move in the right direction. So I appreciate the work on this because we're inventing this on the fly, and it seems to be working, so I appreciate that. Okay, great. Trudy warned me to make sure that I focused on we have to make sure that we're only talking about things that were on the org committee agenda. So moving on to item number three. I have something that I'm going to call activities, update on committees, boards, and activities, and just give folks a heads up that I know that a lot of us have a long-term goal or desire to have all of the council offices on one side of City Hall as opposed to three on one side and four on the other. And that would be a costly renovation and something that nobody really has a stomach for at this time. So we're constantly looking at ways to make efficiencies in the terms of the way that we're using our space and ways that are inexpensive, value high, cost low. And one thing that we'll be circulating around in the coming weeks is proposal to add some conference room space that's larger than our conference room space and larger than the mayor's office conference room space, so that we can have meeting space that's available to house some of these larger discussions we have without having people sitting in like two rings around the table like Saturn. So we're looking at the space that's sort of by where Jill Mendyka is. There's like a large area of cubicles, and to converting that into a conference room, or actually a conference room with a divider that has, I think, modular tables, so it can be set up, you know, in, like to do work groups or set up to be like a classroom, but also set up to have a large table. And we're getting bids to see what that would cost. But the idea is just that we don't have a space for really more than 9 or 10 people to meet comfortably in a room, and there are I think it's something that the mayor's office actually could also use. Anyone who's ever had a meeting in the mayor's office knows that's true. Most awkward space in the entire city hall. So just so that's on your radar, this really, the idea is looking at how we can have a better conference room space, because right now two of our conference rooms have windows, and they're not used very often, and it could open up space for us to be able to eventually make a bigger move if we have conference room that's functioning, it frees up those spaces. So that's kind of what the background of that is. When you see it, if you think it's the worst thing you've ever seen, that's fine. If you think it's the best thing, that's fine. But just so you know, when it's coming, that's part of this ongoing conversation about how do we eventually combine councils so that we're on one side of the city hall. This is coming from the lonely other side of the building. Okay. Are there other updates on committees, boards, and activities? Commissions? Last night we got our, Mr. Tolbert and I were at the water utility. It's an incredible enterprise. And they give us the preliminary budget presentation. And I think folks will be glad to know that the base rate is staying the same in their proposal, and the cost per unit will be going up a matter of cents. The impact will be about $4 annually to an average residential home. Is that right, or was it a dollar? It was small.
It was very small.
It was very small.
Everything seems to be about the same as this year, same as the year before.
Yeah.
Water rates, everything.
Yep. They've really gotten to a point where what they're predicting we'll use and what we actually use is exactly in alignment. And it's interesting, you look at the graphs, and like years prior it was all over, but I think with energy efficiencies, water efficiencies, and the base rate as our to cover the cost of the basic cost of distributing the water being a little higher, and then the cost per unit being a smaller portion of the bill has really leveled things out. But that presentation will be coming to the council, and it was pretty impressive. Boring. But pretty impressive.
I wouldn't say boring. The one thing I will say, the thing I think is important to remember about water is, one, the fees pay for the entirety of the utility, and two, this budget continues to make the major investments that we're making in the capital infrastructure to replace our aging water mains across the city, which is important. We have a really well-run water utility.
Yeah, and it was interesting when they talked about, you know, when we make changes.
Very good tasting water. This is not
award-winning.
I just use the bottle.
But when they make changes, when we make changes as a city to, like, our RSVP street construction program, we had an impact on the water utility because they used to follow us into the ground and replace the water mains in those areas. And they have a schedule that they're working on, and so now their costs for construction have increased because they're not following. We dig up the streets, they do their work, we put back together the street. And so those costs have gone up. And so those things, sometimes we had to make the change to add arterial streets to our street reconstruction, but the impact on the water has been significant. So that's just a mini update on water.
Anybody wants to borrow my budget book? I'll loan it out.
Yeah, I've got one too. Ms. Nelson.
I have an update to share from the Ramsey County Complete Count Committee. So we have quarterly meetings that are open to the public and any interested stakeholders, whether you're part of an organization that wants to learn more about the census or you're just an interested individual who wants to understand how to support the work. But the Complete Count Committees are like a whole effort. There's not just a Ramsey County one. There's count committees all across jurisdictions and counties nationally and statewide that basically mobilize the community and leverage community networks to tell people about the census and to carry the story about why it's important. And the biggest development between this meeting and the last one is just the saga of the citizenship question in the census, and something that we've been tracking really, really closely. And there's been, you know, some promising initial victories, but then I think we're all just keeping one eye open and feeling still a lot of reservation about whether or not there'll be a citizenship question or what the different avenues are for something like that to happen, because it just, frankly, it can't happen. It would be resulting in historic undercounts of communities of color and so many negative implications. So we'll have updates on that and our work on that and on the census, but it's on Thursday, July 18. That's next Thursday. It's from 5:30 to 7:30. It's at the Arlington Hills Community Center. And whether you've come or not, we try to do like a welcome and orientation so that anybody can just kind of come on in. And we always have dinner. So let me know if you want more info, but you're all invited, and we're working hard to make sure that we're ready to count everyone next year.
Great. Ms. Prince?
And, you know, to that point, we did Eastside summer kickoff on July 11th, and the census people came, and they are offering really good jobs. They pay $16.50 an hour.
Yep.
They pay 58 cents a mile for mileage. You get a phone, you get a cell phone to use for doing that business, and you set your own hours. So whether it's retirees or college students, it just seems like kind of a kind of a great way to add add a little bit of income if you're looking for that. And what they're doing this summer is determining whether buildings are occupied or not. So it's just kind of windshield work that they're doing right now. So if you know people who are looking for a little extra income, you just have to be over 18 and a citizen.
Great. Mr. Missouri?
Yeah. So this is for the census question. Has the committee started organizing different community partners that will help with the census?
Yeah, so we have a huge network spanning faith and immigration legal services and kind of like existing community centers and ethnic community organizations. So it's basically like a super group of all the different community organizations, and then there's subcommittees. So there's a renter subcommittee, there's African American subcommittee, Southeast Asian, there's different like traditionally undercounted groups, if that makes sense, who have their own subcommittee with community representatives and experts. So this is our fourth meeting, so we're still building out all those different groups, and it's kind of like rolling. Anyone can enter at any time. So if there's people or suggestions you want us to reach out to, we'll 100% get in touch with them.
Is there like a link? Is there a link that they can sign up to?
I believe we have a landing page. I can have our people follow up and share it. Yeah, mm-hmm. We can send it out.
Thank you.
Yep, totally.
Other updates? Don't have to have them. One thing I will just say is that we've been bouncing back and forth a little bit with putting some of these updates, like the SAC presentation or Rushline presentation, sometimes based on scheduling, but either at our 10 o'clock meeting, at our 3:30 meeting. And I just want to say, for the record, I hate them at our 3:30 meetings. I feel like when our 3:30 meetings stretch into 4:30, 5, or a little bit after 5, it really makes the public hearings too long to not have a break in between. So I'm really going to try to push to have these at 10 o'clock. And I appreciate folks rallying to get in here at 10 for the meeting today. I was kind of lonely when he first showed up. But I think it's important and it's helpful for us to get this information, and it's good for them to hit it, all of us at the same time. But I'm going to really push to have those conversations at 10 and not at 3:30, because I just find that our 3:30 meetings are getting to be pretty dense. So unless you really want to keep them at 3:30, they'll be shifting mostly to 10, with the exception of things that we already have scheduled. But we've tried, and they like the Rushline presentation was fairly hefty at 3:30. So, and then there's folks waiting for their thing to come afterwards. And all right, any other updates? Liz Nelson.
I don't have an update, but actually a question. Sorry, before we adjourn. I know that we're developing this and adjusting, but will there be like a general time by which this gets set and we're just like on the train track and we can share this publicly, or what's kind of the status of the schedule for the budget?
Councilmember Brenmoen, Councilmember Nelson, we're getting really close. This has been sent to directors. I've heard a couple confirmations. I think some of the October meetings could still be up in the air, but I still tend to publish it to the public and say, make sure you check the official calendar. This is a work in progress. So, and I've met with the Office of Financial Services, and they didn't have any issues or concerns with this time of the year. Once the mayor proposes his budget, they kind of like to take a little vacation. So there's no issues at this time. So I'm pretty confident that we're almost good to go. So
okay. Probably by next week.
Yeah, by next week we can get it up on the website.
And that, and whatever we publish will just be subject to change. Every once in a while, somebody ends up out of town and we shift a department from one spot to the next. But all in all, those, the bones, the World Cafe, the levy limit.
Landmark points.
Yeah, will be set. Or they are set.
And okay. Council President Brenmoen, I just wanted to also call out on that calendar on the October 23rd, the sales tax area revitalization work group proposal. So this would be the committee that Council Member Tao is chairing. And so next week we're having a work group meeting to really get the background, so then we can start ideating and coming up with some recommendations that we would present through at the budget time.
Okay.
And then the STAR budget would come before you later. So,
and I know this isn't necessarily, we are getting an update from Council Research about housing. That's in August, or is that?
Councilmember Brenmoan, that would be, that is not part of the budget schedule, but it will be part of the organizational committee schedule. And potential dates would be, we're having Public Works come on August 7th to talk about their PCI report.
Mm-hmm.
We could have a housing update the second half of that meeting, or August 14th is available right now. So I'm working with them to schedule that.
Okay. So this is very specific to the budget, and then we'll overlay that with our other org committee conversations.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that most of the updates we're getting from Council Research aren't budget funding as much as policy. So I see that they're not particularly chained to the schedule as others. All right. Anything else? All right. Seeing none, the org committee